I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 8th of August. This hour, Medicare. The 48th anniversary of Medicare was celebrated in Washington last week. Congress decided we should, this was not an easy decision, there was a lot of debate about this program, but that we should have a universal health care system for everyone over the age of 65. It was later expanded to provide insurance for older and younger people with disabilities, as well as people with end-stage renal disease and people with Lou Gehrig's disease. In 2010, Medicare provided health insurance to 48 million Americans, 40 million age 65 and older, 8 million younger people with disabilities. All indications are that it is an extremely popular health insurer, although it does have some problems. But some like it so much, they say it should be expanded to people of all ages in this country. This hour, we're going to be talking about not only the history of Medicare, the future of Medicare, the joys of Medicare, the problems of Medicare. Patricia Newman is our guest, Senior Vice President of the Henry Kaiser Family Foundation and Director of the Foundation's Program on Medicare Policy. Dr. Newman is widely regarded as an expert on Medicare policy issues, providing direction for all work conducted by the Foundation related to Medicare and health coverage for elderly and disabled Americans. And before joining the foundation, she served for 6 years on the professional staff of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Health in the U.S. House of Representatives, and for 3 years on the staff of the U.S. Senate Special Committee on Aging, working on health and long-term care issues. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Dr. Patricia Newman. What do you think about Medicare? If you're on it, do you like it? Do you think it has some problems? Do you think that we should give up the whole plan and go to a voucher system, as has been suggested? What about the history? Do you have questions of the history of Medicare? Do you think that everybody should have Medicare, that eventually that's what this country will move toward? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and I would imagine our phone lines will get crowded on this issue, so call when you have a well-formulated thought that you would like to share. Dr. Patricia Newman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. What a great topic to celebrate. Happy birthday, Medicare.
Happy birthday, Medicare. Could we start, please, with the history of Medicare? Was this really a tough bill to get through Congress?
Well, it did require some maneuvering, as all big legislation does, but there were a lot of forces that came together to help Medicare and actually Medicaid also get through in the mid-1960s. I mean, back at during those days, it's hard to remember, but half of all seniors lacked health insurance.
Isn't that something? One half?
One half. So it was a time when there were serious concerns about the health costs that seniors faced. And the country was motivated to do something about it. There had been an effort earlier to provide more universal coverage, which didn't exactly happen. But during the early 1960s, there was sort of a movement toward provide coverage and care for seniors. And sort of the forces came together ultimately to allow LBJ, President Johnson, to sign into law the Medicare law.
And there have been extensions to it, providing insurance for older and younger people with disabilities, people with end-stage renal disease, people with Lou Gehrig's disease. Have there been attempts over the 48 years to go beyond even that?
Well, there were discussions during the Clinton health reform debate years to use Medicare as a vehicle to provide health coverage for all. And people talked about single-payer systems and Medicare for all. And, you know, still today, some have talked about using Medicare as a vehicle to expand coverage. But I think now, with the health reform established and the law of the land, There's less focus on expanding Medicare and more focus on using other mechanisms that are now in place.
I said in the intro, do you like to be called Patricia or what should I call you?
I'm generally called Tricia. That's fine.
That's okay? Okay, Tricia.
Yeah.
I describe this program as, by all indications, an extremely popular health insurer. You don't hear a whole lot of people who are on Medicare complain vociferously about this program. Most of them say they like it.
Medicare is an extremely popular program. It enjoys broad support with the general public, and seniors are very favorable about Medicare and very anxious about making changes to Medicare. It's not a perfect program by any stretch of the imagination, but it does provide enormous economic and retirement security for people on the program. And when there's talk of big changes, you can sort of feel the anxiety rising among seniors who worry that they may be more financially exposed than they are today.
And what do they like about it?
Well, I think for many people, it's relatively easy and straightforward. It provides coverage for most of their healthcare services, their hospital services, physician services. Often, billing is relatively straightforward, even though there's a lot of discussion about how complicated the billing processes may be. But for an individual senior, they go to their doctor, they go to the hospital, they get a statement, but there's not a lot of paperwork. And I think for many people, that's a huge relief. There are choices in Medicare, so people can choose traditional Medicare, where they have broad latitude in terms of the doctors and other healthcare providers they see, but they can also choose a more organized health plan known as Medicare Advantage plans, like HMOs, and some people prefer to get their health care in that fashion. And there's also the drug benefit, which went into effect in 2006, which filled a sort of big gaping hole in what was the Medicare benefit package, and that has really provided substantial help to people who were otherwise facing enormous challenges paying for their prescriptions.
Mm-hmm. Tricia, I have read that this program operates at 1.4% overhead, while the private insurers who will have to meet the Affordable Care Act maximum overhead is 20%. What a huge difference. Why?
Well, Medicare doesn't have shareholders, all right? So Medicare really operates as a leaner program because it doesn't have the same kind of overhead expenses. It doesn't need to make a profit. It doesn't incur the same kind of expenses as private plans do. So it is able to operate more efficiently.
We hear from some doctors that the payments to doctors under Medicare are simply not as what they ought to be, and some doctors say they don't want to take and will not take Medicare patients, that the whole program is somewhat underfunded in terms of hospital payments and doctors' payments. Is there validity to that criticism?
You know, the issue of physician payments has gotten a lot of attention and I think for good reason. There is a formula that was set in law that affects the way the government makes payments, Medicare makes payments to physicians. And over the course of the years, for a number of complicated reasons, this formula, which had a lot of good intentions in terms of setting fair payments and trying to slow the growth in payments for physician services, but it has resulted in a system that threatens to reduce physician fees by more than 25%. And so Congress has had to step in each year for the past several years to be sure that doctors did not get a reduction in their fees. So there's a lot of attention going on right now in Congress to come up with a better way to pay physicians. And not only to avoid the problems that have come up in the past couple of years, but also to put into place incentives to reward the kind of care that people think is fairly important. So to encourage more primary care services, to reward those doctors that spend time trying to figure out the problems of their elderly patients, primary care doctors. And that is a very current issue facing Congress. That is something that is on the table today. You talked about doctors saying that they're not participating in Medicare, and there have been recent news reports about that. The truth is most doctors do participate in Medicare. The vast, vast majority of doctors do. There is a relatively small number of physicians who have chosen to opt out of the Medicare program, less than 1%. The numbers have grown, but it's still very, very small. So it's important to put those numbers, I think, in context and try to understand the extent to which people are having trouble finding a doctor who will see them. Most of the national surveys I've seen suggest that most people do not have problems finding a doctor taking Medicare, but there may be pockets of trouble areas that need to be pursued.
Mm-hmm.
But the big picture is a lot more positive than is sometimes conveyed in press accounts.
Mm-hmm. The other problem that we hear is that healthcare is so expensive that Medicare is the payments, the whole reimbursement, all of that is much more expensive now for the government than it used to be by a large margin. Of course, Medicare would be influenced, and I wonder what they can do about just the increased cost of health care in this country. It keeps going up and up and up.
Well, that is true, although Medicare has had a pretty impressive track record lately and has been growing relatively slowly on a per-person basis. In fact, and this probably is going to surprise some people, Medicare is growing slower on a per-person basis than private insurance.
Hmm.
So one of the big issues for Medicare is less cost per person, but they're just an awful lot of people who are getting older,
right,
who will be coming onto the program and needing health care and health insurance. And so a bigger question for policymakers in our country is how to pay for the care of an aging population. But it's, I think, important to point out that that's not because Medicare costs on a per person basis are growing out of control, because really, to the contrary, they're growing quite slowly.
Mm-hmm. Do you foresee a day, it would call for a whole change in philosophy in this country, but when you look at a system that so many people are happy about, and when you look at how much money would be saved if you did do Medicare for all, do you think that it will be an economic necessity for this country to move to a kind of Medicare for all system just for cost reasons?
You know, a lot of people have pointed out the efficiencies that would be involved in moving to such a system, but it seems like such a far stretch from where people are today philosophically that it's almost impossible to imagine what it would take to get to that point.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls. We're talking about Medicare. It celebrated its 48th anniversary last week, and we're looking at how sound the program is, how the program was passed. It's hard to imagine this program would be passed now, but people take it for granted and seem to think that it's a pretty good program. We're looking at where the problem areas are, where it has performed well, and asking for your thoughts. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and that's that. We'll be with you in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to phone calls now. Victor in Oconomowoc. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm very supportive of Medicare. I'll be consuming it someday. I am a supporter of Obamacare, but I wish that they had gone with the Medicare for all solution. That said, if I was going to reform Medicare, I would have doctors paid for by health measures, not fee-for-service. I would also remove the cap on income tax to fund it. And I would mandate better. We have exchanges for insurances, right? Why not exchanges for hospitals? And use cost transparency and exposure to the market to drive costs down. What are your thoughts?
Oh, you raise a lot of really interesting ideas. In terms of having doctors, paying doctors for health outcomes, I think there's a lot of interest in that. And I think people who are looking at ways to revise the way physicians are paid are taking a careful look at quality incentives. So you actually might see some progress in that area. And there's also interest in looking at what's called physician profiles to take a better look at physicians who are outliers in terms of what their practices are. So I think as time goes on, there will be more activity in that area. The cap, the payroll tax cap that you mentioned, the Medicare payroll tax cap was lifted, but not for Social Security. So I wasn't sure if that's what you were referring to. That cap's already been lifted.
Mm-hmm. He must have been referring to Social Security.
Maybe referring to Social Security. But there is, of course, a new payroll tax on high earners that was included in the ACA with the idea of bringing more money into the system, and that's for high earners. The idea of exchanges for Medicare is also sort of interesting. There's interest in doing, in some ways, Medicare Advantage could be considered an exchange because it is a system of that allows people to compare private plans. The idea of hospitals is definitely a new one and might be sort of an outshoot of the work that's being done on accountable care organizations, which is this new idea that has gotten a boost by the ACA, which tests payments to hospital and other doctor provider systems to try to improve care for people covered under the program.
When you think of reforming Medicare, of making it stronger and better, Tricia, what do you think of?
Well, that's so funny because people use the term reform all the time, and the word means different things to different people. Some people think about reform as sustaining the program so that it's there for future generations.
Mm-hmm.
That might mean more financing because you need more money in the system to maintain benefits for more people. Other people say, well, no, you have to cut benefits and cut program spending to spread the dollars over more people in the future. So one sort of way of thinking about reform is reforming Medicare so it can continue to cover people a generation from now. Other people talk about quality and doing more to improve care for high-need, frail seniors and others who would benefit from better coordination of care, better transitions when they leave the hospital and need to go home with supportive services. And there's much work that is being done in that area. Some people think about, minimizing fraud and abuse and trying to clean up the program in that regard. Others talk about making Medicare more affordable because even though Medicare provides really, pretty good benefits, it doesn't pay for many services that seniors need, like dental care and most long-term care services. And it has relatively high deductibles and cost sharing, which can be a financial burden for many people in the program.
Right. Let's go next to, thanks, Victor, Tony in Tomahawk. Hi, Tony.
Hi, and thanks for the program. Calling about the Medicare donut hole, which Obamacare closed, and I've read numerous news sources that it has saved $7 billion. It was less than a year ago the Republicans were screaming about Obama was cutting Medicare $700 million. And here he's saved in that short period of time, he saved 10 times that amount. And I'm just wondering why that doesn't get more widely publicized. And, how can the president be so incredibly tongue-tied to not just say that in a simple sentence? He saved 10 times what they were complaining about just less than a year ago.
Well, I think it's hard to there is a lot of noise out there, and there are a lot of people talking about the various provisions of the health reform law, and I think it is hard to get out various messages. And I think there has been an effort to get out some information about the donut hole and try to make a pretty big deal about that, but I'm not sure. I mean, apparently, based on what you're saying, that message hasn't gotten through, and that's too bad.
Thank you very much for the call, Tony. It is, and maybe you can explain why this is the case, This issue in this country is so controversial. People have wildly different ideas of what we need to do about health care, and yet everybody would agree on some basics, and that is costs have gone up, people are hurting individually, companies are hurting. Everybody can say, listen, we can't keep up with the increasing cost of health care. But that's about as far as we go. And then people go crazy with this, don't they? Have they always been that way?
Well, I mean, remember, it has taken decades to pass a comprehensive health reform plan. And there have been numerous attempts by Congress over the past century to do something like this. And that, you know, part of the reason is there are so many stakeholders in the healthcare system. Everybody is a stakeholder in the healthcare system. Everybody is a user. There are so many different groups of people who either have a real or perceived impact, who are affected by the law one way or the other. And that, you know, obviously creates a lot of anxiety, real or imagined, about whether or not how the law will affect them. And I think people do disagree about what are the major issues. Some people are more focused on costs, and others are more focused on coverage.
Mm-hmm.
For the millions of Americans who don't have health insurance coverage, you know, that really is a high priority. And for the hospitals that serve them, that's a real concern, because these patients come in and don't have insurance to help cover their costs. But for employers who are working hard to maintain coverage for their employees, the rising cost of health care is a real concern. And for their workers, the rising cost of health care is a concern, even though they may have health insurance. So I think people have different perspectives because they have different situations and they interact with the law and the healthcare system in very different ways, and that makes it that has made it very difficult over the years to come to consensus on different solutions. I think one area where people seem to be able to speak the same language is when they talk about doing more to control costs by improving quality and reducing unnecessary costs, limiting preventive hospital readmissions, and doing more to make the system work better for people in a way that doesn't drive up costs excessively.
Let's go to Jean in Appleton. Hi, Jean.
Yeah, hi, Kathleen. I'd like to make a few points. Your guest has given all the reasons why Medicare and the Medicare Advantage plan should have been the basis for Obamacare, rather than the incredibly complicated maze that the Affordable Care Act presents. And the biggest flaw in the Affordable Care Act is tying it to employment status. If we had Medicare for all, it would have automatically brought in the young and healthy, which seems to be a big problem for the current system, that they can avoid it. And the other thing is tying it to employment status. In other countries, they consider it a moral issue that everyone should be covered, and that it doesn't have to be through an employer, or it doesn't have to take into account how big a company is or how small. It's just everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So we're stuck with this, but it could have been better. Okay?
Okay. Thanks, Jean. Tricia, you agree?
Well, you know, it was a complicated set of political forces that came together to allow the health reform law to pass through Congress and get signed by the president. And it was controversial. You know, there were some people that wanted to build on Medicare, but there were more that wanted to create a different system. And, you know, the thought at the time was to build on the current employment-based system, not to sort of take down one system while creating another one, since so many people in our country do get health insurance from their employer.
What about her thought that this ties into what we were talking about earlier, whether or not we go to a Medicare for all. But doesn't it strike you as fairly profound that most other countries in the world do take this as a moral issue and believe that people should have health care and there shouldn't be groups of people who don't? And yet in America, we don't seem to, I mean, we do. It is framed that way by some people, but the country hasn't embraced that fully, that it is indeed a moral issue.
Yeah, I think that's not language that people are comfortable using in our country. And I think your listener, Regine, was right to point out that other countries are more comfortable talking in morally sensitive language than we sometimes are here. And so... You know, the health reform law isn't often talked about in those words, but it does begin to create, at least in most states, depending on what happens with Medicaid, a platform for expanding coverage to far more people than had it in the past.
Mm-hmm. And she is absolutely right about things being complicated. For heaven's sake, why does it have to be so complicated?
Well, I think it's complicated because it's trying to build on a current system, and it tried very hard not to undo the coverage that people had. And so if you know, one of the objectives, you know, it's, you know, people talk about it would be so much simpler to start from scratch and create a very simple program for everybody, but there was a great deal of concern about making changes that would have the effect of taking away coverage that people already had. And, you know, for good or for bad, the legislation, the law tries to build on the system that was already in place rather than wipe the slate clean and start from scratch.
More phone calls we welcome. A couple lines are open right now. We're talking about Medicare celebrating its 48th anniversary last week in Washington, and we're talking about the history of the program, where it stands now, how it was passed. And I welcome more calls from people who are on Medicare right now. Let us know what you think about it. What problems do you encounter? Overall, are you pretty satisfied with Medicare? And we can also entertain the question of why that isn't a model for healthcare reform in this country. I want to talk a little bit more about what we've added since 1965, and we'll do that. 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Dave in Appleton is our next caller. Hi, Dave.
Hi, and hello to Gene, Dave, from Dave. Anyway, Medicare, much more efficient than private industry. Anytime you have fee-for-service in private industry, you simply are not going to get the same effectiveness of care per dollar. Medicare does a good job on that. And the only thing Medicare hasn't wrestled with that we haven't as a country is basically end-of-life care.
Mm-hmm.
We do not, as a country, recognize the fact or accept the fact, despite, you know, a lot of people in this country are very religious, the fact that we all die and that's a natural part of life. And that's a huge expense, we all know. A tremendous amount of the Medicare dollars are spent in the last illness of life. So that has to be wrestled with. When that does, the Medicare can deal with the remaining costs efficiently. The other thing is Obamacare is a path for Medicare for all. Because I can tell you, as an independent business person, I think businesses are going to shed their health plans for economic reasons, and people are going to go on the exchanges, which then have more rules, or more clear rules, more safety nets for people, and are more competitive because you have millions of people bidding on a consistent product, like buying a car, millions of people bidding on a consistent product. So eventually, we will end up with a few major people out there under consistent rules, and we will get to a Medicare for all through the back door of having millions and millions and millions of people on the exchanges.
Tricia.
Well, okay, first on end-of-life care, well, that is a really tough conversation for our country, and when it has come up in Washington, it has gotten sort of amplified and exaggerated, and that sort of led to the discussion of death panels, which, you know, are obviously not in the health reform law, but there was a lot of talk about that. In fact, if we look at our polls, we see that people still think that there were death panels in the health reform law, which is unfortunate because that, you know, is just not really true. But on the issue of end-of-life care, you're absolutely right. Medicare spends more than 20% of Medicare dollars is for care in the last year of life. And the question is what to do about it. And is that something that should be sort of orchestrated and managed from policymakers in Washington? Or is that really the practice of medicine and about making changes in the practice of medicine and having physicians work more closely with family to understand the needs of families and how the needs and desires of families and patients change over time? And, you know, there seems to be so much more work that does need to be done in that area to respect the values and preferences of patients and families, and more work to be done educating physicians and other healthcare providers on how best to work with families. But it's a challenge to think about that from a public policy perspective and what Washington can do and what Medicare can do in that regard. On the issue of Obamacare being a pathway to Medicare for all and people shifting into the exchanges, there is a lot of interest among some people who are thinking about different ways to reform Medicare in looking at what goes on in the exchanges and on whether and to assess whether or not that's a good model for Medicare. And honestly, people who are looking at vouchers and premium support systems for Medicare have raised the question about whether or not if it's good enough for younger people, why isn't it good enough for older right. people? And I think that issue will be engaged in the coming years and get more attention.
Really? You think it'll become more popular, the voucher program?
I think those who are supportive of vouchers may look to the exchanges and say, well, if something like this works for younger people, maybe we should think about it for Medicare. It's, of course, very different from Medicare because Medicare already has a functioning system and it's well established, and it's not a new system. It's not designed to expand coverage. But in some ways, the exchanges that are set up for younger people could be adapted by folks who support premium support as a model for Medicare's future.
Mm. Well, you've been in this area for a long time. Is that problematic?
Well, I think any big change requires a lot of careful scrutiny. You know, the premium support, it would be a huge change for Medicare. And, you know, people use the term premium support and vouchers in different ways. And these proposals could have enormous implications for what people pay for their health care. An earlier version of the voucher system would have capped costs per Medicare beneficiary, and that would have significantly increased costs to the individual on the program. But there are a lot of different ways of setting something like this up, and it not only has an impact on what people pay, but it has a very differential impact on people depending on where they live around the country. So that's what I mean when I say, you know, it would be a sea change for Medicare, and it would be a sea change for people covered by the program, and it could change both the basic entitlement, you know, the nature of the entitlement, raising questions about are people still entitled to a defined set of benefits, raises questions about what they would pay for their benefits, mm-hmm. and whether they would pay very different things depending on where they lived around the country. So, you know, it is an idea that people continue to talk about, but I think it is a big idea which could have enormous implications for people, both whatever generation's affected, whether it's implemented now or in the future.
Medicare celebrated its 48th birthday last week, and we're talking about Medicare this hour of the show. Welcoming your phone calls, 800-486-8655 is our number, 800-486-8655. You can email as well at talk@wpr.org, or you can send us a Facebook, and that's talk at WP. No, that's the Kathleen Dent Show. Our guest is Tricia Newman. She is Senior Vice President of the Henry Kaiser Family Foundation and Director of the Foundation's Program on Medicare Policy. And we'll be back to you in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our next caller is Dave. Thanks for your interesting call. Colin in Green Bay. Hi, Colin.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a quick question, I guess. We've been talking about Medicare for All, and I guess when Obamacare was originally being put forward, why wouldn't businesses kind of get more behind that? Because I feel like if we could take healthcare out of their pocketbooks, basically, and move it more to a nationalized thing, then why wouldn't they be like, why wouldn't they think that would be a good idea? I guess would be my question.
Well, that's a good question.
That is a good question. You know, again, there's businesses, you know, are run by people, and people have strong philosophical views about the role of government. And some are more open to a strong role for government than others, and some really believe in the private sector and the role of private insurers. And you know, there has been a historical resistance to a large government program larger than Medicare. And even though employers may not relish the fact that they're a primary source of health insurance coverage for their workers and families, there really has not been a push in the business community to shift to Medicare for All.
Thank you.
There has, you know, been discussion, you know, in the past there's been discussion about sort of moving away from employer-based coverage, getting rid of the when there have been discussions about getting rid of the deduction for that employers take for providing health insurance. But that has raised a lot of concerns for among workers who were concerned about what they would get if employers pulled out of stopped offering them coverage.
Mm-hmm. You would have thought that employers would want this off their backs. It's very complicated for them, and it's a big expense for them. You would have thought that more would say, "Let's do a government plan."
You know, maybe, but you know, philosophically, if you look at the organizations that represent employers, they are not organizations that have pushed in the past for large government programs.
Right. Yeah. Thank you very much, Colin, for your call. Akeem in Duluth. Hello.
Hello. How's it going?
All right. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I had a comment about the Medicare situation because I feel it's a good program, but it doesn't do anything. It doesn't cover nothing. And every time you look around, they try to make you always pay the copay, and it's all. And then it just doesn't cover nothing. I just don't understand why we got a medical program that doesn't cover all our needs, not only in the doctor's office but at the pharmacy.
Tricia.
Well, you know, you also are raising a very good point because Medicare does provide basic coverage, but it does have high cost sharing. It does have a deductible for hospital services, a separate deductible for physician services. A lot of people pay a deductible for their drug expenses and then their copays for these services. So that people on Medicare do have relatively high out-of-pocket costs. And I think many people don't understand that. I think a lot of people think, well, Medicare makes health coverage for seniors free. And that's, as you know, as you've just pointed out, that's really not the case. And in fact, Medicare households spend a lot more on their health care than younger households. 3 times the share of their household budgets go to health expenses than younger households. So even with Medicare, There is a serious concern about healthcare costs. One of the costs that's not covered is dental, and for most people on Medicare, dental is a huge expense that's not covered by their insurance. So again, some people, when they think about how to reform Medicare, are focusing more on how to make Medicare more affordable, just as others are talking about how to scale back coverage to as part of the deficit reduction effort for the future.
Thanks, Hakeem, so much for your call. Barbara in Sturgeon Bay, hi.
I've had a fair amount of experience with Medicare this year, and I find it very confusing. For one thing, the Medicare catalog, if they could simplify it a lot more, it would be helpful. Another thing is they make this claim that you can call Medicare at any time. It's an 800 number, which is fine, but you can only talk with them about claims before 4 o'clock in the afternoon and not on weekends because they don't have access to them. And that would be a difficult problem in many cases for people who are working because they're working until like 4 o'clock or something. And also, my other comment would be that if you make an appeal about a decision that Medicare has made, their appeal is final, and yet none of us really know who consists of the Medicare courts. Are they office workers or are they doctors? Being clarified on a lot of these things would be helpful, although Medicare in connection with doctors has been helpful.
Tricia.
Well, you know, I think it's a great idea for Medicare to work on simplifying the big handbook, Medicare and You. And I also think you're making a great suggestion about expanding the capacity of the 1-800 Medicare toll-free number so that it's available to people when they need it. I think it's an ongoing challenge to keep the program working for people, and both of those are really good ideas. One thing I would point out for listeners is that each state has a health insurance counseling program. They're called SHIPs. And these are people who are based within each state who provide counseling services for seniors who have questions and issues related to Medicare. And it's a really good first point of contact because these are trained volunteers who take the time and are trained to take the time to help with claims and help with appeals and to get people the information they need to try to sort through problems that may be hard to sort through by talking to a 1-800 operator.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Thank you for the call, Barbara. Philip in Madison.
Hi. My question was, is there a way to, would it be affordable to expand Medicare as a public option just to let people of all ages just buy into it? I understand there's budgetary shortfalls in the program. I'm wondering if that could help shore up the program financially. Also, I also understand that the reason why the Affordable Health Care Act was written the way it was to get was partially to get the private insurance companies on board, which is why they steered clear of it. But could that be a possible option in the future instead of just people who don't have insurance, instead of just penalizing them like the current system is going to, or the Affordable Care Act is going to, instead offering them the public option of buying into Medicare at any age? Would that be a viable solution?
Well, most of the buy-in options that I've seen could end up adding cost to Medicare because you do have more people on the program. So even though people might come in younger and they lower the average age and lower the average cost, there's still more people in the program, which contributes to current costs and long-term costs for Medicare. So I'm not quite sure that that would be seen as a way to save money for Medicare.
Thank you, Philip, very much for the call. I wanted to ask, just going back historically, those programs that have been added to Medicare over 48 years, the program to provide insurance for older and younger people with disabilities, and then end-stage renal disease, people with Lou Gehrig's disease. I was just wondering how those happened to be added, Tricia.
Well, some of these come to be just kind of in the negotiations that happen in Congress. I mean, the issue issues for people with disabilities. That was a major change and an important contribution that happened in the early 1970s. And it, you know, sometimes these things happen because there's backdoor negotiating that isn't quite so straightforward. In the case of the end-stage renal disease program, that was supposed to be this sort of small demonstration, but that became a full-blown entitlement for people. And, you know, sometimes things happen in Congress because people push very hard for them and they're sort of there at the right place at the right time in order, when a deal is being struck.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're working out sort of a little bit of horse trading that goes on behind the scenes helps to has been effective in sort of getting new benefits included and getting people covered who wouldn't ordinarily have been covered.
Would you say that the program has changed substantially over the years or pretty much not?
I actually would not. I mean, I would say the program has evolved, and I think it's important to think about any new program, in some ways including the Obama health reform law, as sort of the next example that will inevitably need to evolve. Medicare was enacted at a very different time, 48 years ago, and it has evolved to conform to changes going on in the healthcare delivery system. As innovations have come up in terms of measuring quality and figuring out how to pay providers, Medicare has changed. But in other ways, I think the changes have been incremental, adding the younger population with permanent disabilities, adding the end-stage renal disease population has not changed the fundamental structure of the program. Even adding the drug benefit, even though it's administered very differently from the rest of Medicare, it hasn't changed Medicare at its fundamental level.
Yeah, interesting.
So it has been a work in progress,
mm-hmm.
and it has been expanded and improved over time, but the essentials have remained fairly constant.
Karen in Superior, hi. Karen?
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead, Karen.
This is Ann in Superior.
Oh, okay, Ann.
Hi, I have Medicare disability, and I pay about 18% for my Medicare insurance, Part A, B, and D. And that's just a comment. My question is, when I get my EOBs explaining my medical bills, Medicare reimburses a tiny fraction of what the bill is. So how can a system operate like that? Mm-hmm. How can the providers? I mean, what's going to happen as we shift to the Affordable Care Act?
Well, Medicare payments, you know, there's a lot that goes into calculating how much Medicare pays providers. And the goal of Medicare is to pay providers fairly for the services that they provide, but not to pay more than what might be considered fair and reasonable, because Medicare is trying to be a prudent purchaser and using taxpayer dollars in order to pay providers for providing services to people under the program. And I think in general, Medicare is considered a fair payer for providers. I think it's always going to be the case that any healthcare provider is going to want to maximize revenues and to get as much from the program as they can possibly get, because that's just sort of a natural incentive. But Medicare, on the flip side, needs to be fairly vigilant in paying providers what is considered fair and reasonable, and to not be financing excess profit margins. And that's a very careful balance.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Karen, very much for the call. And finally, Jim in Tomahawk, running short on time. Tim. Jim.
Hi. You know, all of the narrative that goes to how to negotiate and make this very complicated, to me, should be washed into a conversation about using the workers' comp model that we have as the basis for all of our national health care, because it is a national health care program, and include Medicaid and Medicare in that as a complete package. And then that allows for people to get away from making a life decision on the, in terms of the social welfare system. It allows it allows everything to be based on a work, going back to work or learning how to work program. And it seems like it's a model that is already in place and can be talked about. So the rest
all right, we're out of time. What do you think, briefly, Tricia? Yes, no?
I think it's something to look at.
Okay.
I think that would be a big change and something to think about.
Okay. Thank you so much for being with us. Happy birthday, Medicare. And
happy birthday, Medicare, and thank you so much.
And happy birthday to you, whatever it is, Tricia. Okay. Thanks very much. Tricia Newman, Senior Vice President of the Henry Kaiser Family Foundation, Director of the Foundation's Program on Medicare Policy. Thanks to K.P. Whaley and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program. Thanks for all of your calls. There are great conversations ahead.